This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Now, just a note that this is a very sensitive conversation that we're about to embark on, one that is very necessary. I don't know if we've been able to explore the fullest context of it. And if you want to engage with us, maybe ask questions or you want to share your experience. And given the sensitivity of the nature, you can also remain anonymous. It's purely okay. It could be triggering also for some people, this conversation. And if you would like just to be given the space to share what you've been through or, you know, what you are currently going through or even how you feel about it, please use the opportunity to do so. We really are here to be able to hold you in the space. Because we're talking here about whether or not a person should seek justice for being infected with HIV. Right. So in South Africa, there's no specific law criminalizing the non-disclosure, transmission, or exposure of HIV or other sexually transmitted diseases. So what is the legal position if your partner has given you an incurable STD or even HIV? As no specific laws criminalize the non-disclosure, transmission, or exposure of HIV or other sexually transmitted diseases, our courts have adopted a workaround by applying general criminal law principles to matters where a partner who is aware of his or her condition, who isn't taking any medication, and still engages in unprotected sex with his or her partner, knowing full and well that his or her partner will become infected with an incurable STD or HIV. Cases such as this have been linked to successful attempted murder and assault with intention to cause grievous bodily harm convictions. Did you get that? So there is no specific law that criminalizes it. But if a person knowingly knows that they're HIV positive or that they've got an STD, they're not taking any medication, they still engage in unprotected sex, knowing full well that the partner does not know about it or will become infected, then they can institute attempted murder and assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm convictions. So we're exploring here what the recourse is, or the punishment really. If hypothetically speaking, there's a partner and the partner knows that they're HIV positive, and the partner still in their knowledge, full well, engages in unprotected sex, does not disclose to the other partner that they're HIV positive, engages in unprotected sex, subsequently infects the other partner. Can that infected partner now charge you? Can they sue you? What recourse, what justice is it? And maybe can ask you another question. What does justice actually look like for that person? Or what should justice actually look like for this person? Should we be seeking justice if infected with HIV from a partner who knew that they were HIV positive? So we'll explore both if they knew or if they did not know. We'll get into it with our guests and I'll introduce them in just a moment.
Power Lunch with Faith Mangope, weekdays 12 to 3 p.m. on Power 98.7.
Now we're talking, should a person seek justice for being infected with HIV from a partner, whether knowingly or unknowingly? That's what we're asking today. Let's welcome our guest, Yvette Raphael, who's Executive Director advocating for the prevention of HIV. Yvette, always a pleasure speaking to you. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you so much, Faith, and thanks for having me.
We've also got Ntando Yola, who is the Community Engagement Lead at the Desmond Tutu HIV Foundation. Ntando, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you, Faith. I'm really happy to be part of this discussion.
And in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Advocate Miyahabo Sejeni, who is a practicing advocate of the High Court, to understand the legalese behind this. But Yvette, before we even get to the legalese, we have to get into the psychology of it. It's quite sad, but it happens. And time again, you'll hear how a partner, you know, infected their partner with HIV and they didn't say anything and they didn't disclose. I've even heard stories of where the couple was HIV negative and then they get married and then the other partner contracts HIV, whether through relations outside, they come back, infect the partner and they don't say anything. right? There's a psychology that is involved in this, and I'm just trying to understand what is it actually that causes a person knowingly that they're HIV positive to sleep with their partner, knowing very well what could the ramifications of that action be?
Hi, Faith. So I think before we go any further, I just also have the responsibility to disclose my own status as somebody who's living with HIV, got infected with by somebody who knew they were HIV positive.
Sure.
So it is, you know, it's a conundrum because in South Africa, as you mentioned, it is not criminalized. And what we are seeing right now is that the importance of people knowing their own responsibility, right? Their own responsibility as somebody who is living with HIV or somebody who's not living with HIV on their own prevention, what I could say risk or their own prevention responsibilities. So yes, it's a difficult one, but because it's not criminalized, I think the responsibility to prevent HIV is totally rested on the individual. For example, I take responsibility for not insisting on a condom. I take responsibility for not being, you know, responsible at the time enough to ensure that I don't get HIV. Because this is a human, it's a human disease. And I don't think people understand just the psyche of it. One, the person on the other side who is HIV positive might be struggling with disclosure. But you as the person who then know your status, and what proof do we have? Unless you can prove it in a court of law that the day or the minute you had sex with somebody who was HIV positive, did not disclose, you then knew your own HIV status as negative. So I think the responsibility is totally on each and every individual, negative or positive. And I speak from the side who has been infected, what was my responsibility? And I'm not taking blame or I'm not trying to, you know, make the case any easier, but because I live with HIV, I know the difficulty of disclosing, but the responsibility is on the individual.
And Yvette, you know, I thank you so much for sharing, because we can draw a lot of knowledge from the experience that you've shared, especially from the psychosocial perspective. Ntando, and forgive me, I used to look at it as a form of cruelty. Like I did, and I don't know how many people can attest to that. I'm just being honest here. I used to look at it from a form, because my mind can't wrap around, if I know my status and I know I'm HIV positive and I'm going to another child, what is it about me that feels as though I've got the right to do that, at least even insist on us using a condom? I looked at it from a place of cruelty, that a person must really be cruel and unkind and evil to impose such a thing on somebody else, knowing very well what their status is and knowing the other person's status. But maybe you can just clarify a little bit about maybe what is involved in all of this.
Well, Faith, I'm looking forward to the legal person to really, you know, bring the legal aspects of this. But I think I'm going to align myself with what Yvette is highlighting in terms of responsibility. And I think Yvette has really touched on the responsibility of individuals as humans. You know, if you know your HIV status, and I think going to really either intentionally or you just are avoiding anything that relates to your status, but effectively that makes you to put, you know, somebody else, your sexual partner, at risk. And I think that's one level where, as Yvette has highlighted, there is a need for responsibility. And that I would add and say need for just being human, really, in really being considerate. I don't know, considerate sounds like, you know, just the lightest way of putting it. But I think above that, all of these issues really speak to the broader structural issues and responsibilities, as we speak about responsibility in terms of the whole HIV prevention and HIV treatment agenda, which is, you know, there's the level that Yvette is mentioning, but there is a broader level of of civil society and organization and advocacy groups like ours that are working in this field to really work with people in all forms of addressing and wanting to address the issues of stigma, because stigma is one of the things that is responsible for this. But again, there is the aspect where people are really intentionally doing this, and therefore the legal aspect really should come in, and it would really be interesting to hear what the legal person has to say about this and other, you know, organizations that are specifically focusing in the legal aspect of HIV.
Yeah, and I think more than anything else, we'll get into this notion of stigma. I mean, with the time we've got together, around how even in a marital situation, let's say that the partner goes outside and then comes back and then gets infected with HIV, they don't tell their spouse that they're infected with HIV. We'll talk a little bit about that, but also, Yvette, it's when the couple itself, you know, they often used to say that before you engage in the intimacy or sex, you need to be able to go for an HIV test together, you know that you both are HIV negatives, talk about HIV testing and the expectations from the relationship, from the community engagements that you're having as an organization. Are these things currently happening? Like, do people actually talk and say, okay, now, baby, we've reached the stage of our relationship where we're going to take it into the intimate level. Let's go get tested together.
Yes, Faith, and I would like to apologize because I'm just moving from one space to another. There might be a noise, but people are getting to that space. A lot of work has been done in South Africa with regards to stigma and how do we reduce it, and as well as getting not only couples, but South Africans, humanity to start thinking around what does it mean for me to be in a healthy relationship. And we should not shy away from the fact that a lot of people, because it's such a human thing, Faith, you would not like to lose your partner. So even if you know your own status and the fact that you're HIV negative, you don't want to rock the boat and go to somebody else and ask them. The responsibility is also on the negative person to say to them, listen, babe, let's go and get tested. But a lot of that has changed. I have changed. I do part-time work. My side hustle is making clothes. So Niatungisa at Mall of Tembisa, a place called Fozzy. And what we do there is also just to destigmatize this thing. And I've seen a lot of couples, when they come to us, they come to do clothes, but I incorporate that in the conversation. Have you guys been to counseling? And it is changing how people do things. Have you been to counseling? And I also hear a couple once told me and spoke about just how they are in counseling, but also the pastor advised them to go and get tested. So HIV is part of our lives. And I think the fact that it's not criminalized in South Africa is a big plus for us, because you can just imagine we would have prisons full of people who unintentionally infected their partners because of the word love. I love my partner, but how do I tell them? You see their reaction towards HIV. You see how they treat other people with HIV, and you don't want to lose a partner like that. So, yes, South Africans are starting to think about it. What is a healthy relationship? And I want to take this opportunity as somebody who's living openly with HIV. I think it is so unfair to those who think they're HIV negative to only leave the responsibility of disclosure to the person that they might not know their status of. Remember, you will not have unprotected, I don't like to use that word, but you would not have sex without a condom with somebody who's HIV positive, right? Unless you go through the counseling, you go through speaking about it and all of that, and somebody advises you around PrEP, how to prevent it. But when you have sex with somebody without the condom, you are only suspecting they're HIV negative, unless they've told you so. So that is the part when I say healthy relationship. I'm HIV negative. I tell my partner I'm HIV negative. I would like to stay that way. Can we go for a test, right? Mm-hmm. And then when the person is also HIV positive, your reaction should speak so much to the love part and actually think about how do we present. Right now, the zero discordant couples, the one couple takes ARVs, the other one takes the same ARVs to prevent themselves from getting HIV. So we just need to open our minds about it and also stigmatize people with HIV less.
Yeah. You know, as you speak about stigma, I remember a time, Tando, and you'll be able to attest with the work that you do, when I think was it the early 2000s or 2000 and yeah, it was about the early 2000s. When South Africa was still trying to grapple with how do we effectively deal with the scourge of HIV infections in the country. And one thing that would be apparent was how there would be stories of how people were raping children and raping virgins to what the in the aim of what they believed would rid them of HIV, just speaking to perhaps the ignorance that existed within the time. It's still also the time where people used to believe that when you sit on a toilet seat that had somebody who had HIV sit on it, you know, you'd get infected, and also the issue of blood and the like. But there was genuinely a population, a group of people that used to believe that if I sleep with a child, I have sex with a child, or rape, if I rape a child who and I'm HIV positive, I'm then clearing myself of that HIV. There's a psychology there that happens. Is it a fear thing? Is it because society is still highly stigmatized? Is it also, or is it the fact that society may just be psychologically broken? I don't want to use the word sick, but broken.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a combination of all of those, which is very unfortunate. I think it speaks to the same, I mean, it's the same questions with regards to a whole lot of ills that we face in the country, where, you know, children are killed and are raped and many other things that are really happening, which I think are the questions that the country is grappling with, because all of these are really against the human rights that are enshrined in the Constitution and, you know, amongst the 27 rights that are called the Bill of Rights, which are really inherent to really making sure that all humans have a right to enjoyment of all rights and freedoms that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights. So I think all of those issues are seriously, especially within this period of the of 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Well, the question about what it is that people, you know, are facing, or that would lead people to really act in these forms of cruelty and inhumanity, really remains a question that needs to be answered by the country with regards to how we are addressing this. Because, you know, those are some of the early stories that we had, as you are mentioning, like in the early 2001, I mean 2000 in the country. But I think different forms of all of these violent acts are still happening in the country. And it's one thing. And again, to speak about the whole criminalization, and I mean, as far as I understand, South Africa has no specific laws that criminalize non-disclosure and transmission or exposure to HIV. And therefore, it is something that has to be dealt with. But I think what is important is to deal with this from a very collective or, shall we say, a multi-sector approach, as our country and our strategic plan, national strategic plan, actually, you know, is based. And I think those are some of a lot of things that really need to be, you know, to be considered around this.
Yeah. You know, Yvette, as you're talking about collective responsibility, that it's not just the partner that is HIV positive who's supposed to disclose. It's that who is the partner that is also HIV negative and wants to stay negative that needs to be able to take accountability and responsibility for their own body and saying, baby, let's go get tested, or baby, can we please use a condom and the like. Again, you've shared how you've experienced this, where a partner knowingly that he's HIV positive infected you with HIV. I'm trying to understand the psychology of that partner. Did you ever understand why would you take that step knowing very well what your status is?
Yes, Faith. And that comes around the issue of love,
the issue of their own fear of you know, losing the person that they supposedly love and what's going to happen and not having sufficient information. And I think one of the great things that we need to actually applaud ourselves as a country is the fact that we have so much HIV, had actually so much HIV education around us. And I really, really, you know, not only felt for the partner, but I also understood because I had a responsibility, and I'm not making excuses here, but the understanding, it only becomes criminal in certain scenarios. And I'd like Ntando to also speak about those, the responsibility of men. We have not spoken.
Oh, Yvette, we're going to get you a clearer signal, but when we come back, we're also going to get into it, into the legal side of it with Advocate Muyahabo Sibjeni. And if you've ever been through this, or you'd like a space that you can speak about your experience, maybe you are the one, you know, who had a partner infect you with HIV, knowingly or unknowingly, and now you're living with HIV. Or maybe you came close. Did your partner ever tell you why? It's 1:30. Let's get your latest Empower News.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
The question we're asking is whether or not a person should seek justice, whether civil or even criminal, against somebody who infected them, whether knowingly or unknowingly, with HIV, right? Should a person actually seek justice? Should you sue the person that infected you? Should you institute criminal charges against the person who infected you? As we've heard that though it's not criminalized for non-disclosure, but you can seek through attempted murder or assault with intention to cause grievous bodily harm convictions. But should a person actually seek justice for somebody who infected them with HIV? We're still with Ntando Yola, who's a community engagement leader at the Desmond Tutu HIV Foundation, as well as Yvette Raphael, executive director advocating for the prevention of HIV. And of course, we're going to be joined in just a moment by our advocate just to shed light in terms of what are the legalese behind it, right? But let's start off with the psychosocial element of it as well. And Yvette, you know, you were speaking about the responsibility of men and women. Right now, the statistics of HIV infection is coming around 15 to 24-year-olds, where it's becoming the biggest problem, especially when it comes to teenage girls and how they are contracting HIV over 1,000 every week. And somewhere I read it was also about every 2 minutes, a young person is infected with HIV in this country, which speaks dynamically to how the issues of power and negotiation and where the woman positions herself in respect to men in this country. How do we even begin to address this without addressing it with, you know, through economic justice?
Yes, and I'm glad we are segueing into this, Faith, because most importantly is the young people that you speak of are between the ages of 10 to 18. And that is just not right as a society where we see men, the older men. We know who are the men, who are the older men, at what ages are they, the men who are infecting the young people. It's between the ages of 24 and upwards, right? So these men not only prey on young people, but it's criminal. They rape young people when they see vulnerability. I said my big message this World AIDS Day is alleviate poverty. Alleviate poverty, and you will not find women in a vulnerable position where they definitely have to stand be in a position where they have to beg for their next meal. Empower women, make sure the playing field is level. Also, because we have Ntando, and Ntando is my comrade and friend, yeah, as a leader of the men's sector, what are men doing to ensure? And the last time I was on the show, Faith, remember, it was men saying how women prey on how young girls throw themselves at them. There was a father who wanted his daughter not to happen to her. But what is the responsibility of men in this country towards the country? And that is not to rape women. It's not to prey on the girl child who is in a child-headed family trying to put food on the table for her siblings. and you give her KFC and expect a sexual favor. I'm always saying to men, please look for your type, look for your age, look for intanga zakho ukudlala ngabo. But young people does not make you a good one. And when you listen to conversations men have, they are men that literally actually target young people and say, ita exami lezi, meaning it's young people between the ages of 15 and 17. That child is not at a legal age to have sex.
Yeah.
And but now that we have the statistics, we know how many young people are HIV positive, obviously got HIV from men older than them. Can we talk about how many men are in prison this time? How many men are arrested this time? No, we cannot get to that. And my reason why I will always advocate for HIV not to be criminalized in this country is because women will be the ones in prison. I tell you now for free, Faith, that we get tested when we go for antenatal visits as women, right?
Mm.
We are the ones who bring back the news that I am
I'm HIV
and positive. And imagine if we could make... HIV is criminalized, women would be arrested. And what do men do? And when you say you are HIV positive, they distance themselves from that HIV status.
Even though they may have been HIV positive knowingly themselves and infecting.
Exactly. They distance themselves. They say, HIV, because you see, Pumagimi, I'd rather abandon you and the baby, but also don't tell anybody. Whatever you do, this HIV is yours. You brought it into the family, and women sit at the back end of this stick. So we need to really, really get through to men. I'm not saying men are the ones infecting women only, but I'm saying please, please, can we just check our humanity, both male and female? But when we look at things in this country, young people are not infecting themselves. How many men are in prison for rape? Almost none. Because why? I like the fact that you're bringing in a legal person, because our legal system has not transformed. Our legal system is so male-based, and they're talking from a male perspective mostly.
Yvette, you've said some moving points. I want to move it to you, Ntando. Help us, maybe, you know, Ntando, we need to just be real here. Help us understand the mindset of a man. You know, I know you don't represent all men, but maybe you can give us some kind of indication of how a man processes information. We've heard this time and time again. We've had conversations here on Power Lunch about how men hardly go to the doctor. They don't like it. They don't, never mind to get checked out, right? So checking your HIV status, not everybody does it. Sometimes, and I've heard this, that sometimes a man will say, no, I make sure that if my partner is HIV negative, it means that I'm cool too. Right. And then on the other side, as Yvette was speaking about it, 10 to 18 year olds are being infected every single day. The older men are infecting them. That means that the older men, knowing very well that they're HIV positive, are deliberately targeting these young women to infect. So I would hate to, I don't want to vilify men. This is not a conversation to vilify men, but I'm trying to understand the psychology of somebody who will go after an 18-year-old or 15-year-old, knowing very well that they're HIV positive and don't want to use a condom with them, and know very well that they will infect them with HIV.
Yeah. Well, in part, it's the mindset. And the bigger part, though, it is the culture in the country and really the entitlement that, and all of the things that really are part of just the fabric of how men behave in the country, at least in relation to this. And there are very many, there are multiple aspects to it, and it is a complex issue. But I think what is important is to actually recognize and build up on the activities of men's organizations, because at least they are out there in the country across provinces that are really working towards this. And I think one of the important things when you hear, for instance, the men met in Parliament in the past month as part of the International Men's Day to actually address these issues and also reflect on a lot of work that is done by men through the South African National Men's South African National AIDS Council Men's Sector, as well as a campaign that is in the country known as Dakwane Reime, which is calling up on all men to really stand up and work against this. And the reports that we are hearing is that these organizations are really working hard to work against all of these issues that we are facing, to work with the mindsets that we are talking about, you know, to also challenge from all fronts through programming, through engagement amongst men and many other approaches, and challenge all of these ideals and these cultural beliefs that men have that are really destroying and are working against the fiber of developing and building the country.
So it's a cultural belief, hey, Danu? You're saying it's a cultural belief that a man has got a, I don't know, that they've got a right. They've got a right to, you know, to possess the body and they've got a right to the body even when the body has got HIV.
So that is what we are hearing, you know, in the conversations that are happening. And in fact, that is what is documented, that culture and multiple forms of culture bring in religion and many other very strong beliefs in society are very much responsible for all of these ideals and all of these violent acts against women and children.
I'm going to take your calls in just a moment. I do see them on 0861987000, but I want to bring in the legal side of it now. The director of MB Chabangu Attorneys, Brandon Chabangu, joins us now. Brandon, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you very much, Faith, and good afternoon to you and your listeners.
Maybe you can give us an understanding. What does the law say about a person transmitting HIV to a partner? First, let's talk about it knowingly. So a person knowingly knows their HIV status, they know that they're HIV positive, yet they have unprotected sex with somebody and they infect them with HIV. What does the law say?
Well, I was listening to some of your guests today. I think the general principle is that right now there are no laws in this country that force or compels a person faith to disclose his or her HIV status to anybody. Even if you are in a relationship, I'm not compelled per se, unless I voluntarily disclose to you my sexual HIV status, if there is.
Even if you're married, so like, let's say that, so you don't.
Even if you're married.
Even if you're married, you don't have to say, baby, I'm HIV positive or baby, I'm HIV negative. You don't have to disclose at all.
Yeah. It's a voluntary, as I said, it's voluntary.
Sure.
That's the law in this country. However, if you look at Section 10 of the Constitution, from which any cause of damage is derived, it speaks of one's right to dignity, one's right to reputation and so forth, and not to be injured without consent of some form. You then will think that Section 10 becomes your protective clause, mm-hmm. which first starts as a civil act. You will have to then bring a civil action against me to say I have infected you while I knowingly and aware that I have HIV/AIDS. Now you are positive. You first claim damages. What form of damages could be medical damages, could be harm to your reputation and so forth. The criminal courts have not convicted one convincingly on an issue that relates to infection of a person with HIV. So you are then seeing that the legislature has a duty to then look beyond the provision of Section 10 of the Constitution and maybe talk of criminalization of those that intentionally spread illnesses that are not curable to others. Because it's not only HIV. You've got herpes, gonorrhea, and others that are being spread, which are also harmful and deadly to the recipient at the end of the day. So countries such as Germany and Ireland have laws that criminalize such. But South Africa does not have those laws.
Do we know if any other African country has got laws like that?
At this stage, I don't know of any, or I cannot speak of any African country that has such laws. South Africa will be the leading country if we were. But right now, in Africa, I doubt we've got any law or country that criminalizes such.
We'll take your calls, and we'll go deeper with this matter on 0861987000. What is justice, and should we be seeking justice? If a person infects a person with HIV knowingly, or an STD, knowingly so, should that person seek justice? I'll take your calls after this.
Urgent, topical, timely. Power 98.7. Getting you talking about what matters.
Indeed we are. Let's take your calls now. Let me start off in Johannesburg with Tando. Hello, Tando.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And you? I'm just reading from the text box about your story a little bit. This is your... Just talk to us. What happened on your side?
I grew up, with my parents both have HIV. Mm-hmm. It's a typical black household where my mom goes to church and she's been praying for a husband to change and come back home, and he came back and gave her HIV.
So he brought HIV with him to the...
Yes. They were married for a long time, but for a long time he had been gone, and he was not staying with us for a while. But he came back and he infected my mom with HIV. But I do not see how the law would even assist us in any way, because in my view, this is a social issue. And because these things are happening, because socially we are allowing them. For an example, the church in this case, it was the church that was encouraging my mom and other women who are just like my mom to pray for their husbands to come back. So, yes, you can have the law, but it will still continue because socially we have enablers and it's going on and on because it's being allowed by our social environment. So maybe we should look at social ways of solving it, not necessarily the law, because we are throwing every problem. We're throwing the law into every problem and it's failing us. It's been failing us. It will continue to fail us. Can we look into social issues, social measures?
Let me understand the church part as well, Tando. So your father left, I'm assuming that he left, he had other relationships, obviously. He had other relationships, he had other women. And yet the church was encouraging her to keep praying so that her husband can leave the other woman and come back to her.
And come back home,
And then when he comes...
And it's continuing. It's still ongoing.
What do you mean?
Like he's still,
so he's still with other women right now?
Yes. He's infecting more if they're not infected already. But it continues, and the church is also playing that role. It's still continuing to do that. Women are, I don't know whether, I don't want to say oblivious or what, but they're still believing that they can pray for their husbands to change by coming back to them, and then they continue with their marriage without going to test or anything like that. So it's more like an answered prayer kind of a thing. And then they get infected. And then you hear it happened to this other woman and that other woman and another woman.
Sure. You know, I'm so sorry for what is happening. Oh, my goodness. Tando, I'm so sorry for what has happened to the family. But then how is your mother taking it? May I just ask? She found out, obviously, that she's HIV positive. But how did she respond to it?
Well, it took some time because she didn't tell us about it at first. And we just saw her losing weight. I'm not sure whether it was the stress or HIV itself, but it took some time. But now she's fine. It's not even detectable. She's taking her ALV. She's quite well.
Wow. And thank you so much for sharing. I really do appreciate this. Thank you so much. And I want us to speak a little bit about this issue, Yvette. Societal construct. You know, Tando's is speaking about how her father went out, got woman, came back home, infected her mother, and he's still continuing with other women, infecting them even today. And yet we encourage women to take back and to pray for their husbands when they step out, and encourage women to accept the husband in whichever state when they step out. Certainly I can say the patriarchy has done a serious number on us, and maybe even the way in which we value marriage above all else. But clearly here, it's not marriage for the benefit of two parties.
Yes, Faith, and I think I'm glad you mentioned the role of patriarchy here, and just how all of this benefits patriarchy, because none of these are seen by the men. Like, this is all a woman's fault. Your husband left because you did something wrong. Let's pray for him to come back, right? But also, Ntando spoke about the organizations that are led by men. And Tando speaks about the social way of us probably being able to solve this. So we need to come together as a country and actually start talking about those things that impact things like this, especially around now you are a husband and you have a certain responsibility to the person that you are married to. If not, you end the relationship. However, only men can have this discussion. I think women have done a great, great job into, you know, just accepting this illness. And as you can hear from Thando, her mom is well. Her mom is undetectable, meaning her mom cannot infect somebody. But what is happening to her dad, he's continuously going out there and infecting other women. So it's also now the responsibility of another woman, a child for that matter, to say, what do I do? I know my dad is doing this, and I see women around him. What do I do? And she sounds so very helpless. So we need to just ask men to really, really do the hard work. And here for me, I tell you, the hard work is men to check themselves. I don't want to talk about patriarchy princesses. Maybe we'll have a show for that too another day. But let's talk to men. And Thando has a responsibility to get these men to talk about the hard issues, the issues that we deal with on a daily.
Sure. You know, as you're speaking about this, Brandon, and again, I mentioned this, that couples, right, a husband will, they have other relationships, they cheat, they become unfaithful, they contract whatever, let's even say an STI, they get an STI outside, they don't disclose to the wife, they come back, sleep with the wife, knowing very well what they've got from outside, and then so the cycle perpetuates itself. Are women not coming forward who are married, who've had men step out on them, come back into the home, infect them as well with HIV, and then so as a business as usual? Because from my perspective on the outside, it sounds like a very disempowering and slightly very cruel phenomena that happens. So do women not come forward and say, my husband stepped out on me, he went and contracted HIV on the outside, he's back now, and he's infected me and I don't know what to do?
Well, it's a very depressing topic as I hear you guys. But the truth about it is that it's not only men that are silent when it comes to this infection. In this case, or in your question, you find that very often a person cannot be able to prove, especially if they have multiple partners. They are not in a position to prove who exactly infected them. I had one case, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, where a woman wanted to contest such. And the husband will come forward and say, yeah, but this woman cheated on me with somebody a year or two ago. And I have evidence that they were not, condomizing. So you tend very often to find that in a relationship where either party from time to time cheats or practices infidelity, that then you find it difficult to prove the harm, the source of harm. And even in divorce cases, you do find that one of the parties contest and say, I've got this lifelong medical needs because you infected me with HIV and so forth and on. Mm. And the other party says, look, you might be the one that has infected me because at the time we got married, we never did this testing and so forth and on.
Sure.
And another hard thing is that you find that where in marriages, where one party has a life cover, is subjected to this annual HIV testing while the other is not subjected to the same. And you find that one party, 1 year, you are tested negative. 4 years down the line, test positive and says, yeah, you are the one that infected me. So the issue is very dicey. It's not easy to always say it's the man that brings it or the woman. It's a question of voluntary expression by one party to say, look, I'm the guilty party. I take the blame if I take the blame.
Sure. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let me start off in Midrand. Hello, Martin.
Hi, Faith.
Yes, sir.
Mine is just a contribution towards the destigmatization of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've done it to a point where we have oversimplified the consequences of having HIV. And as a result, that oversimplification of HIV and its consequences in our bid to destigmatize it then results in a social attitude towards HIV where people become, to some extent, careless and no longer being cautious about HIV. Now, so then you then get to a point where people see no need for them to be telling other parties out there that, you know what, I'm HIV positive. And so as a result, again, it leads to the this thing of somebody having an affair and then having sexual intercourse with a party without divulging their status. Then the other thing would also come as the issue of love affairs. You can't really put legal lines on them, because when you say I love you, are you saying I love you on condition I'm not HIV positive? Are you saying I love you on condition that you divulge your state? Are you, when you say I love you, it usually doesn't come with all these conditions.
Sure.
So as a result, at what point then would you then say you want to legally hold the other party accountable for that? Well, that's just my part.
And Martin, you know, I remember a time when campaigns were held on TV. That's what I'm saying. I grew up in an era where the campaign on TV was, you'd always find a couple, they go in, they sit with the doctor, right? And then the word, the tagline would be, baby, it's time to take our relationship to the next level. Remember those adverts? And the adverts were there to encourage couples going for HIV tests together, knowing their statuses together. I wonder if people actually go for HIV tests together as a couple because, baby, it's time to take our relationship to the next level. Do we do that still? And would a person be wrong to love on condition that you don't infect me? Or to love on condition that you disclose your HIV status? We'll come back and talk some more after the news.
12 to 3 p.m. Power Lunch with Faith Mangope.
We're still continuing with our conversation regarding, should one seek justice for being infected with HIV? If your partner infects you knowingly or unknowingly, should you be seeking justice? And what kind of justice does it allow for? We're still with Brandon Chabang, who's the director of MB Chabang, attorneys Ntando Yola, who's a community engagement lead at the Desmond Tutu HIV Health Foundation and co-founder of the HIV Prevention Advocates in South Africa, as well as Yvette Raphael, executive director advocating for the prevention of HIV. And you on 0861987000. Brandon, I'd like us just to shed some light on an incident that, and I was just sharing also with my technical producer, who reminded me also of an incident that used to happen in the early 2000s again, or I think late 1990s and early 2000s, where you would hear a story of how, I think was it women, that were going around and raping men and infecting them with HIV, purposefully done. So in this case, what recourse becomes that? Because this one, when we used to hear about it, it was revenge. So out of revenge for whatever it is that they were going through, they were infecting men with HIV. Can a person then, does that not then not extend into criminal? Because you're doing it on a basis of revenge. There's a reason, there's an intent behind it. And how does one go and prove about intent?
Well, the first thing, Faith, that needs to come to the fore here is, one, whether or not were questions asked at the time or prior the sexual act was committed. If I meet you in a nightclub or wherever and I engage in a sexual intercourse with you unprotected, without asking questions about your HIV status, that is deemed to be a consent of some sort to whatever consequences that might come as a result of that actual sexual intercourse. Secondly, the story of those women, it did make a lot of rounds back then.
I remember
the story very well.
Mm.
What will happen is that the male partners will say they discovered later that, in fact, they've been infected.
Mm.
So it tells you that if you did not question, because there was even one civil case, I think, in the Pretoria High Court, where a woman attempted to sue a man for having infected her. Some of the questions that were asked were, did you question the sexual status of the person before the sexual act was committed? If I don't question your sexual status at the time, I cannot later on come back and say, yeah, but you infected me. And two, if you did not question, what did you do immediately after you become aware that you had sexual intercourse with a person that may be HIV positive? If you don't do anything until the day you are tested and discover that you are positive, you are deemed to have consented to even all the consequences that comes with that sexual intercourse.
Sure. So you're supposed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that after I've had unprotected sex with somebody, that I did my part in contracting or not contracting HIV.
Correct. Because one of the things that happens, even when you deal with these matters for damages, you find that if you failed to interrogate your partner before the sexual intercourse took place, you are then not allowed to come and interrogate after the effect.
Oh, wait a second. Yes. Then, Brandon, how does it work then in marriages? If I did not interrogate my partner before the act, I can't interrogate him after the act. So in a state of marriage, for example, when a person, as I said, they go outside and they cheat or unfaithful, they come back and I did not interrogate them after. And I only find out upon maybe going for a regular checkup or going to an antenatal that, hang on a second, this, you know, the test is positive. Then does the partner, the husband become liable, or the wife, for that matter, become liable?
That's the case. And I've seen it in practice, Faith. What normally happens is that if you did not question the status of the party prior, you are equally to blame once you discover that the person, in fact, is positive.
Sure.
One of the problems that you are having is that of the society and the religious practices in this country, whereby people are of the view that you can go to Pastor Chris, he'll pray, then HIV will somehow leave your body or somehow. You'll go to a prophet. There are prophets that are able to do so. Especially women believe a lot in these prophets that say, no, as long as you bring the person in the tithe, they are able to eliminate this HIV thing. There are even people who knowingly marry HIV-positive men who are affluent or wealthy, hoping that there'll be a prophet somewhere in Nigeria that will cast it out at some point.
Sure. It's a lot that's happening out there. And I thank you, Brandon, for drawing in your expertise. Let me go to Bandile in Kempton Park. Hi, Bandile.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Andrew. So go ahead.
I'm good. There is like one element as well that we basically tend to forget about in the early 2000s, there is a lot of children that were born with HIV. And today, those are teenagers. And among those teenagers, they are infecting other teenagers that they are sleeping with. One of the callers also mentioned an issue about like the destigmatization that went far beyond. I worked for a Love Life organization myself, like when I was a teenager, immediately after matric, for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I even feel like a bit emotional even now, because the work that we used to do back then, when I look at it now, that it's no longer there. You mentioned an issue about like some of the adverts that we used to have, shows like
Soul Bodies.
Yes, Soul Bodies. And every single day. Now they skim Sami in between that time that used to have those shows. They are no longer there. And now, who do we actually blame at the end of the day? The destigmatization was meant to help people understand and be able to cope with stress and live with HIV. But we have people that now have accepted that, and there's nothing that is, like, there's basically living with HIV seems to be like just a simple thing. And it's not at all simple, to tell the truth. As people, we look at, we do things, we basically tend to push away the consequences at the end. And there is basically nothing more that we can do at this point. I think, like, there is more damage that has been done, especially, like, for me, the people that I worry most about is the teenagers. I know a teenager that was basically born with HIV, and now she has two kids with two different boys. Those boys probably HIV positive now and infecting other teenagers as well. So it's
a circle that does not want to end, does it?
It's painful, it's bad.
And that's why I miss those campaigns. I really do. And I really do mean it from the sincerest part. I miss those campaigns where we used to, like, you know, where it was all about the ABCs or getting to know your status with your partner. It was all romantic. Now it doesn't exist anymore, and yet we are finding that every 2 minutes a 15 to 24-year-old is infected with HIV. How scary is that? Mr. Stephen in Johannesburg, hi.
Hello.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, Stephen, your signal is a little bit bad. Let's try to get you something that is much more clear, and then we can continue with this conversation. But Ntando, if we are certainly to reconfigure the way in which society works, we have to reconfigure it with pulling down certain stereotypes, certain beliefs. And I wonder to what extent even certain religious beliefs that we have been indoctrinated with. Because somewhere, somehow, it sounds as though a lot of times it comes into play when, you know, the religious part of element of you want to seriously, sincerely believe that in order for me to get rid of HIV, I will go to a prophet, or I will do this, or, you know, or when a husband leaves you or a wife, you must accept them back because God has answered your prayers. How do we start deconstructing society?
Well, Faith, it really comes down to a multi-sector response, which is what the strategic plan of the country is about. And that way, because I think the religious and cultural groupings have a role as one of the key stakeholders in society to really contribute to this. And again, we can't be here and actually suggest that there isn't any that is happening. There are a lot of religious entities that are really into the work of dealing with all of the issues and responding to HIV, including cultural leaders and groupings that are very much involved. But within that, there is a whole lot of other embedded issues within this. And of course, if we talk about religion, religion is the most divided and divisive sector in society because of this thing that we are calling belief. And at times, it's not even a very direct thing, as you are saying, of someone going to a bishop or a pastor who is going to cure them. But it's just really the ideals of religion that have an ability to hide a lot of things that are happening, because we shouldn't have the church or our institution to be seen to be having these issues and yet not responding to the same issues. So it really makes it quite a very complex issue. I do want to go back to Tando's point, because I think with her personal experience, really emphasized the importance of having everybody taking responsibility, from government to cultural leaders to religious leaders and, you know, the private sector and many, many, many aspects of society to really have a very coordinated response to these issues. Otherwise, the legal approach on its own, as we know that, you know, we have the best legal system, as we often hear in this country. But the legal approach on its own is not enough. It requires everybody. It requires society at large. It requires all of the formations of society to really take part. And for those to happen, we need very strong and united voices that are able to address all of these cultural practices and related practices that are really not helping us with all of the issues that we're facing with regards to HIV in the country, including science, by the way, because research has a very key part to play and a key role to play in this. There's a lot of data that is out there about all of these practices. I mean, science is telling us of cultural and religious drivers of HIV. And there's a lot that is there. And all of this needs to be brought together and have everybody play a part in really carving away. And of course, we have a good national strategic plan in the country that really touches on all of these issues, from biomedical to legal aspects, as well as the socio-structural aspects and economics of our society. So I think that's really what we need as society in South Africa, to be able to have a response that is going to take us to 2030, which is targeted to be the end of AIDS.
Yeah, it's a very difficult conversation to have, because it speaks significantly to how far we still need to go in being able to address the societal impact of HIV, and more than anything else, the way in which we have to start viewing ourselves. I'm going to go back to the phone lines. Temba in Pretoria, I'm seeing your story, Temba. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And you, what
all
happened?
Right, hey, you know, it's sad, man. It's sad, man. It's very sad. You know, I happily, you know what I mean, consented to a marriage to somebody that we took, both of us, took a responsible thing that we tested, you know what I mean, before we engage on the marriage, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Right, fine. Then, apparently, I accepted her status. I was negative and she was positive.
Wait, right. so you knew that she was HIV positive at the time of taking the test?
I knew that she was positive, but just because I had love with her, you know what I mean?
Mm.
You see, so I accepted her thing so that we can, let's push this life. Apparently, I had a previous, I got children from previous relationship, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she's got a son from her previous relationship. Apparently, now, our marriage has gone to rocks, it's in rocks, you know what I mean? So, okay, fine. Darling, what do you want? Let's divorce and be free, because what happened is that I caught her cheating.
Why?
You get what I mean?
Yeah.
I caught her cheating, not with one man. It is me, I'm married to her, but I got to understand that she's in love with three other men and a woman as well.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
You get what I mean?
She's got three other male partners and a woman.
And a woman,
okay.
You know what I mean?
All right.
Right. Let me call her my wife, you know what I mean?
Hey.
Nah, let's sit down. What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Let's talk. What is wrong? Now she's starting creating stories against me now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't support me and all this. You cut me from my Mkuku saloon, then from the little money from my Mkuku saloon. I married you. I tried to hustle. You know how I hustle. Now you want me to take you to lavish hotels and all these things. I don't have that money. You know what I mean? Now, recently, about a year ago, she's started, yeah, you are the one who infected me with the HIV, because your child in 2010, whatever year she passed on, you passed on with HIV. Who told you that? I never told you that. You get what I mean?
So do you know your status, Temba? Like you know your
today, I can tell you, take you to any particular health clinic whatsoever. I am negative. All my children are negative. You get what I mean?
Sure.
Know what I mean? All my children are negative. Even today, ever since our marriage, I'm still abstaining.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any relationship. On Wednesday, we're going to the first court appearance regarding our divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So now I wanted to ask your legal guru there if I can make a civil
claim,
because it's affecting me spiritually in my moya wa ka ha right, man. Gore motho ka tseko u tlong botsa gore ke mkenyetse. No, I want to sue her. It's painful. It's painful what she's saying, because now my child died of pneumonia.
Sure.
Get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And she's, are you worried that the other partners that she's got, they don't know that she's HIV positive?
I don't know. No, that is her papa in place. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But the love that I have for her, I want her to live. I supported her. I went to clinic. I used to go and pick up her medication.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
I don't. You know, sometimes this thing that men are doing that and all this into, there are certain men. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Certain particular bunch of lunatics. You know what I mean? Are abusing women. Not all of us. Not all of us.
Ooh, Tim.
It's painful.
Yeah, no,
it's
my heart
painful.
Pains for you too.
You know what I mean? I'm going through now. She's claiming all my houses. She's taking all the estates up and down and all these things. Now I'm becoming a fool.
Well, let's get some legal advice. I think we can take a break. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. Brandon, hopefully you can advise Temba here.
12 to 3 p.m. Power Lunch with Faith Mangope.
All right, we're nearing the bottom of the hour, but Brandon, I can't let you go without advising our brother Temba here. Hi.
Hi, Faith. You'll remember earlier I did mention that the issue of infidelity in relationships also become a source of these infections that happen now and again without the other party knowing.
Mm.
But to advise Temba, he just has to find a way to proceed with the divorce as quick as possible, because clearly he is in a relationship with somebody who does not value him. And you can see that she has no regards to this relationship whatsoever. I think the best that Temba can do is to try to push the divorce to be had as speedily as possible. Come to civil damages, it's unlikely that Temba can get any civil damage because of the allegation that the ex-wife or current wife has said he infected her with HIV. Why I'm saying it's unlikely for him to get any damages is because in South Africa, you prove damages or impact based on who else heard about the injurious information. When you speak of crimen injuria, it is based on who else or before whom your reputation is impacted. If I call you in the bathroom a stupid, you might not be able to sue me successfully. But calling you a stupid or whatever injurious term in the presence of two or more other people who values or see you in a certain way, then that creates crimen injuria of some sort, because your status or your standing is affected before other people. So it is unlikely for Temba to sue on that allegation of having infected his wife with HIV, because that was only mentioned before the two of them. Unless if Temba says this particular spread of negative or injurious information proceeded even before family members or children and so forth, then it creates a qualifying factor to say Temba status and reputation or dignity of some sort before those people who had the allegations has now been impaired.
So he must be grateful that he's HIV negative and he must just wrap this divorce up as quick as possible.
He must thank his lucky stars that he's still negative, if he is, obviously.
Yeah.
Because you never know. She, to me, it seems he was dealing with a crook all along. And there are many ways to contract HIV other than sexual intercourse. They've been together as husband and wife. There's kissing. There's feeding each other. There's small bleeds there and there, cuts. You never know how devious the person may have been. But he must be very lucky that he's still negative.
Yeah, we have to leave it here. But thank you so much to all of you for engaging in this very difficult conversation. Thank you so much to all of our guests. I think more than anything else is just to know your status. Let's go back to the basics. Know your status and encourage your partner to know their status too, at least for the protection of the both of you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.